What have I done in my life to set conditions where the outcome will simply be inevitable? And you may never have thought about how to do this or even doing it, but once you've got it, it is just mustard. It's a mustard way of living. It's magical. And it's the question that gets you, how can I set a condition where the outcome is inevitable? How do I do that? And the whole of the workshop is about finding out how to do that.
Doing it in a negative way.
Go on.
Old Chinese proverbs say, no worky, no eaty. So, there's been times where you haven't worked or you just take it, you know, let your foot off the gas, and you're wondering why the next month you haven't got the money that you normally have.
Yeah.
So I can think of loads of negative where we've set the conditions just right to have that result.
It's really simple. I'm working with an alcoholic who suddenly started turning up at our church, and we're spending a lot of time and energy setting the conditions for him to get through each day without another drink. And sometimes he succeeds and sometimes he fails. And one of the eventual conditions will be that he's spoken to Sam, who's a close friend of mine at church, there's no such thing as an ex-alcoholic, a recovering alcoholic, and his job is to counsel other alcoholics. And we've sat with Keith and told him, you have about 2 years to live unless the conditions of your life change. So my responsibility with one or two other people is to help him set conditions in his life whereby he's not with the same people, condition, yeah, get it? He's not in the same places as he normally is. He's not going through the same habit patterns every day in order that he can break away from his previous life. Otherwise he will die within about 2 years. He's been told very bluntly he will be dead. And he's decided actually he doesn't want to die. We're changing the conditions of how he lives. One of them will be he'll have to leave his job, leave his flat and go into detox, otherwise he will die. That's a condition change. Do you see the difference? That's not a to-do list. That's a huge condition change in his life. Now you've got to do the same. Stop drinking in your business. Right, turn to page 10. One of the conditions of the rest of the day is to get your technician hat off your head. I've got to sack the technician in your business. I've just got to get rid of him or her because he's getting in the way, and she is too. And I've got to let the leaders and the managers have the role here, but mainly the leader. So have a look at page 10. Get your head around the different roles of leaders and managers. If you can add, I'll give you literally 1 minute to add on the left-hand side, any other responsibilities that a leader in a business has that a manager and technician don't. You have to stop thinking like a technician. You have to start learning to think like a leader, an entrepreneur, leading the business. So anything I might have missed a load of stuff, I don't know. What does a leader do that a technician really isn't going to be doing? What's a leader responsible for? Alright, now turn to page 11. Pink circle, pink arrow. Here's the first question a leader has to ask. And you started asking this of yourself in the preparatory workbook, yeah? Who has produced their analysis of their client spreadsheet? Who's done that? Show of hands. Just see this table. I said, who didn't receive the spreadsheet?
I did receive it.
Can I just see a show of hands who's actually done the analysis? Yeah. Okay. Well, at least had a stab at it.
We have a spreadsheet already. Not quite as good as yours.
Okay.
But we can identify from it all the things.
All right. So you have that.
We have that.
Okay. Later on, I want to ask you, what did it teach you? Particularly the one I sent you.
Same thing as you mentioned straight away.
Okay. And that's the responsibility of a leader. A leader thinks like that. Where are we? What's going on here? And frequently, the leader is wrong unless the question is asked properly. Turn to page 12. So that you learn to set conditions, we're going to use a template that came out last workshop. Who's ever done a piece of work and then about a month later or 3 months later come back to it and thought, that was amazing. Blimey, did I do that? Have you ever done that? Or written a report and think, that's really busted. That is a brilliant report. And actually stunned yourself. Well, in the workshop, we touched on one page in about 50. I came back to it and thought, that is amazing. And for the last 3 months, we've taken that out of the workbook and started to run the whole of our business on this one page using the template that you now see in front of you. I'm going to give you a card version because you're going to write on the card version throughout the workshop. Can you pass that round? And this will teach you to think strategically every time you look at your business, certainly today and hopefully for the rest of your business life. Right, we're going to use this and you're going to keep it by the side of your workbook. Don't put it inside the workbook, keep it by the side because you're going to be writing stuff in it as we go through the day. Right, so here's the question, where exactly are we? This is probably the last private exercise that you'll do. The rest of the exercises today will be all teamwork. I want you to spend just 10 minutes writing comments on pages 13, 14 and 15. You have 10 minutes, go. You've done most of this work in the prep workbook. You should just be transferring information into the workpad. One of you will spot the typo, and you can tell me. 13, 14 and 15. What is it you found out about yourself working through the prep workbook? About you and what you really, really want. Who's ever had a mentor ask them, what do you want in life? What do you really want? Yes. What do you want? Who's ever had a mentor do that? Privately, one-on-one. What on earth do you want in your life? Had one?
We have tried that with, what's his name? It's three questions. Can't remember his name now. You know, if you're going to die in a year, you're perfectly healthy.
Kinder.
George Kinder's three questions.
Yeah.
Of people.
Have you ever? Hasn't been. Have you ever had anybody do it to you privately?
Myself, because you know, I've got to think about them before you ask other people.
Yeah. The question is to have somebody who knows what they're doing ask you this type of question. Questions like, what are you here for? What do you think you're here for? What do you want in your life? Who do you want to become? You don't fire that Gestapo light, but it's that kind of question that throws most people, and most men look at me as if I was talking Chinese. What do you want? Why do you think people struggle with this question? In this society.
I think because at the moment in the society we're in, most of it is about what you have, not who you are.
Okay.
As a person.
So then why do they struggle when I ask them the question? They've never been asked, not properly, not deeply, outside of the pub. They don't know the answer to it. They've never thought about it. Well, now I'm asking you, what do you want in your life? You don't have to share this. This is private, but I would ask you to make comment in your workbook. I struggle to understand how human beings can get through 70 years and not understand the answer to this question. What do you want in your life? This is more important than anything you can learn about business, because it will drive your business and the way it looks and feels and functions and eventually performs. What do you want? What's driving you? The second box, know your clients, is you've done your analysis, haven't you? If you haven't, you're kidding yourself. You think you know and you don't about your clients and what they're really bringing to your business. You just don't know. You only think you do. I've never met an IFA who really understands his clients or her clients unless they've done this analysis. Not one. They only think they do. And when they do the analysis, they're almost always wrong. And if you don't know what your clients are telling you about your business, then you're operating in the dark. You're just batting in the wind. Not a clever way to run a successful business.
He's noticed the typo.
You got it. What's the typo?
Same question.
Yeah, I copy and pasted twice. Thank you, Graham. Okay. Send me an email, Graham, I'll send you a book. I'm serious. Send me an email, I'll send you a book. You should now be on the financial analysis of your client and business. You should know this stuff. If you ever went to a bank manager wanting to raise £50,000 for expansion in a certain marketplace and you don't know this stuff, you're out the door. He'll look at you as if you're a joke. But we're not trained to do this as IFAs, are we? This is what a leader does, what IFAs don't learn to do. Everybody could answer the first question on that page. What's your gross revenue? What do you turn over? Who can tell me the difference between gross profit and net profit? Gross profit, net profit? Ian?
Nick.
Sorry, Nick.
It's your revenue, your gross revenue for expenses, that's right.
Okay, which one are we talking about now? So gross or net profit?
Gross is turnover minus cost of sales.
Okay, can you hear? Okay, you want to shout out? They love you. They want to hear you.
Gross is turnover minus cost of sales.
So gross profit is turnover minus cost of sales, yeah.
And net profit is... It's minus the other stuff.
Richard, help him out here.
I'm not sure. I count corporation tax, obviously.
Operation costs.
Okay, so gross profit is he right about gross profit?
Yes.
Yeah. So what's net profit?
What's left after tax?
Okay. It's what's cost of sales?
So it's gross profit then minus
your overheads.
No, it's not overheads.
Okay. Let's get some definitions. Everybody know what gross revenue means, yes? Okay. So your overall revenue, gross turnover. That's 5 minutes early for tea. Well done. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's good service in this hotel. 5 minutes before, bang on the button. Everyone knows what gross revenue is. It's what you turn over.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone know what cost of sales is? Cost of sales?
Yeah, operating costs.
Cost of sales.
Cost directly attributable to getting that business.
Yes. That which I must spend in order to acquire that business. Example?
Wages of staff.
Salary.
No.
FSA fees.
Travel could be. Advertising, seminars, workshops. Okay. Telephone calls maybe, but you look at that as fixed costs. But it's whatever I have to spend to go out and get a new client. Yeah? So this is a cost of sale to me. Yeah? So I cost this out of the cost of sale. Great. So take one away from the other, gross revenue minus cost of sales equals gross profit. Agreed? That's gross profit. Once you've got that figure, you then have another set of expenditure back at base, which is typically what?
Fixed costs,
yeah? Staff, electricity, rental, leases, stuff that isn't going to go away whether you win new clients or not. It's tough, it's fixed, it's there, it's overheads. Gross profit minus fixed costs equals net profit before tax and amortization and other stuff. Okay, does that make sense? You have to know this stuff if you're going to run a business, not an IFA practice. That's how business leaders think. And when you deal with small business owners, they expect you to understand this stuff. If they smell that you don't, you look pretty silly if you don't understand their world. And they'll know you don't understand. And you might wonder, I wonder why I can't attract that kind of individual on a regular basis. You just don't talk the same language. They don't even think their world. You haven't a clue what's going on that makes them sweat at night. You're lost in their world. And they get it. They understand that you're lost. Alright, final page. Okay, literally 2 minutes. You've already done a SWOT analysis. Everybody must have done this at least once in their business life. Go on, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats in your business. What are they? Who here has had a discovery meeting with me? Okay, all of you have done a SWOT analysis before I ever let you have a discovery meeting. Otherwise I don't turn up, do I? So you should kind of, just 3 points from each, just three bullet points. Strengths, weaknesses. What opportunities are out there for me right now? What threats have I got against my business? By the way, which is normally the biggest threat to your business?
You
represent the biggest threat to your business. Your inability to run the business effectively is the biggest threat the business has. Poor decision making, unwillingness to change, hiding from the truth. Well, if you just stop for a moment, I suggest you might want to come back in with your coffees during coffee break and just finish that page off. Let me just ask a question as we break. Who's ever written a book, a full-blown book, or had a stab at writing a real book? Before you die, I recommend it. Okay, just one more thing to do in life. Here's what I've discovered. Ready? There's something quite frightening about staring at a blank page. It is quite terrifying. Writing the book for me was probably the most emotionally destructive long-term experience I've ever been through in business, in work. I've been through some tougher stuff than that, but in business. It just destroyed me. I had to go to sleep every single lunchtime. That's how exhausted I was. And I thought something mentally wrong with me. Until I checked with my editor, who said, well, no, that's what lots of authors do. It's so draining. Facing a blank page and having to communicate the next idea and thinking, where is this going? It's petrifying. Supposing I can't think of another idea and my publisher's waiting for my book, what am I going to do? I can't say I've failed. The one thing I've wanted to do for years, I've failed. But what's amazing is this, and this is applicable to this workshop. As you start writing, listen to this, as you start writing, the ideas flow. I'll say it a different way, the ideas do not flow before you start writing. It's the weirdest experience. As you start writing, the ideas flow. And so I don't care if you don't know the answer to a question in your workbook. The worst thing you can do for you is not to write in this workshop. Don't stare at a blank page. As you start writing, your ideas will flow. Don't ask me why human beings are wired like that, but we are. That's just how our brains and bodies work. There is something that happens between this and this that as you start writing, the ideas flow. Often, when I wish to pray, I have to write down my thoughts first, because my head is just all over the place with a busy day. And as I start writing, my feelings flow. And when I think, yes, that's kind of what I want to discuss in my prayers, I then get on my knees and start praying. Don't stare at the workbook. Write something, anything, and your ideas will flow. Why can I say that with confidence? Because after 9 months of having to do it, I think I know what I'm talking about. Yeah? I've walked that path. And the blank page is petrifying. So try it for the rest of the day.